Hey everyone, welcome to episode 18 of Thomas and the Bible. Okay, we're on chapter 21 here. Now, the way it worked out, because I don't like to cut off in the middle of a chapter, this one's a bit longer today. But the lucky part is, it's also incredibly monotonous. So, I can pretty much read through most of it without stopping for very long at a time. And then at the end, make a more general point about the whole thing. So, hopefully this podcast won't be so freaking long. What we're about to read is pretty much just a crap load of law, quote unquote law. And I think after the first three chapters of today, which is the law stuff, I'll make a point about that. But when we're going through it, really all I have to do is pretty much translate, because some of the language is a little weird, and it makes fun of itself. I barely have to do anything. Such an easy job this is. Also keep in mind the reality behind what's actually happening here, which is that Moses went up for 3 days or whatever it was. He went up to the mountain and pretty much probably had to just decide all this himself, or maybe with, his brother, immediate family or something. But it makes sense from that angle how weird all this law is. Moses sort of had to, come up with everything. But it doesn't make sense from the God point of view, like the point of view that God actually exists. Alrighty. Verse 1, chapter 21, Exodus. "Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them." God's talking to Moses. "If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years shall he serve, and in the seventh year he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master hath given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself." I think that's pretty straightforward. Don't have to translate that. "If the servant shall plainly say, 'I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free,' then his master shall bring him unto the judges, and shall also bring him to the door, or unto the door post, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever." A little weird. Not something I think God would have written. So if you're a servant and you have a family with a fellow slave, when you get set free, if you're a Hebrew servant, sorry, I should clarify, if you're not a Hebrew, you're screwed. If you're a Hebrew servant, when you're due to go free, you can't take your wife and kids with you if they were from your master's slaves. So the master still owns them. But if you have to be with them, you can go unto the judges for some reason. I'm not sure why. It doesn't say why. But you can bring the master can bring him unto the judges. And then he has to put his ear against a door and hammer a hole through it with like a little pointy thing called an awl. Yeah. Yeah. That's God for you. Not much I can say about that. It's just plain stupid. Doesn't even need me to help it. Why the ear part? Or better yet, why would a slave possibly do that? Why wouldn't a slave just get a job like nearby or do anything nearby or maybe try to get a job with the master for almost nothing? Anything to avoid the all part, the ear part. Or just say like, no, I haven't been here 7 years. I've been here the fourth year. It's only the fourth year I've been here. Just say anything to avoid getting your ear punched through with an awl. Seems like kind of a punishment for wanting to stay a slave. All right. "And if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. If she please not her master, who hath betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her. And if he hath betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. If he take him another wife, Her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these three unto her, then shall she go free without money. So that part, the language is a little more confusing. Not terribly important, the details of this, but just to say I did, I'm going to tell you what it was. If somebody buys a woman, but decides not to marry her, she shouldn't just be turned into a manslave and do hard work. That's no good. Can't do that. Could let her, he could sell her back, it looks like. I think that's then he shall let her be redeemed means. He could sell her back or let her be bought, but not to a strange nation, only to a familiar nation. Or he could give her to his son. Then it's fine. Then he has to pay her dowry and do the normal thing after the manner of daughters, it says. Or he could take another wife, but maintain this woman as her wife, sort of, as his wife, sort of. So take care of her, give her food, give her raiment, all that kind of thing. And if he decides not to do any of those three things, he has to let her go. So that's what that is. He that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death. And if a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. So if you understood that, you are a genius, because I had to read that 100 times. Still didn't totally get it, so I had to look it up. And if a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. What does that mean? I think it means, the best I can gather, is that if a... because the last one is, he that kills a man shall be killed, basically. But this is saying, if you accidentally kill someone, i.e. lie not in wait, like you're not intending to kill him, but you do, so you're not intending to kill him, but essentially God did, God took him, meaning it sort of happened naturally, then I would expect the next sentence to be, then you're fine, then you're okay, don't worry about it, or something like that. But it says, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. So I guess that means God's going to give you a chance to, like, run away from people or something. Doesn't make sense. All right, moving on. Try not to spend too much time on it. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, thou shalt take him from mine altar that he may die. And he that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. And he that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. So if you curse your father or mother, you are put to death. I got a question. Okay, what if you are, you're someone's grandson? Say me, I'm a man, someone's grandson. Now, say your parent curses his or her parent, and so they're bad, and then you in turn curse your parent for cursing their parent. Now, do I still have to be put to death for that? I only cursed my parent because they were bad to begin with. Am I dead for that, or just like beaten, or fined a goat or something? No, I don't know. I'm just pointing out how dumb these little laws are. They're all stupid. And if men strive together, and one smite another with stone or with his fist, and he die not, but keepeth his bed, if he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time, and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. All that says was, if you... get in a fight with a guy and hit him, or hit him with a rock, and he doesn't die, but he has to walk on a staff, then you pay him for his lost time, I guess. That's what it says. And help him be healed. That's what that said. Yep. And if a man smite his servant or his maid, with a rod, and he die under his hand, he shall surely be punished. So, we just had the commandment a while ago, if you kill a normal person, you're to be killed. But, if you kill a slave, then you are to be quote-unquote punished. Not killed. Punished. Need I say more? I think that speaks for itself. Notwithstanding, if he continue a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. Oh, okay. Well, of course. We're all reasonable people. Obviously, if you beat a slave to death, but they, you know, stay in a coma or hang on for 2 days, well, then of course you're not punished for that. Duh. Everyone knows that. Why did the Bible even need to say that? That seems obvious to me. So the message is, if you're a slave and you get beaten, just make sure to die right away. Otherwise, no one's going to care what happened to you. If you survive for 2 days, no one cares. They're not even going to punish the guy who beat you. If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall surely be punished, according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give a life for life. For eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And if a man, so what that little mischief thing was, is that if you beat a woman or hurt her when she's pregnant and her baby dies, then the husband can do whatever he wants to, I guess, or you get fined by the judges. But if also the woman dies, then you die. Just how it goes. And if a man smite the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid that it perish, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. Well, that's nice of him. And if he smite out a manservant tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. Big mistake, God. Now what you're going to see is a crapload of servants sort of loosening their own teeth, you know, or just one, loosening a tooth, sort of, and then like egg on their masters to hit them. And then, you know, when the tooth is lost, then it's like, oh, you're free. Because, I mean, what's one tooth compared to indentured servitude for the rest of your life? Obviously, I'd make that swap. Duh. Try to pick a tooth I don't use very much, but, you know. I think the Bible's getting a little loose here in its morals, gotta say. What's next? You're gonna have slaves becoming free all over the place. If an ox gore a man or a woman, that they die, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. Okay, hold on now. All of a sudden, we're including oxen in our moral calculus. Like, all of a sudden, they can be held responsible for killing someone, so we stone them. Well, if that's true, then why can't we be held responsible for killing an ox? Answer me that one. Sorry, I got a little fuzzy there. Like, it's either one or the other. You're either in or you're out. Oxen. Enough of this, you know, taxation without representation or whatever. And I love how it says surely every time it says surely. Like all this should be obvious to us. Like, surely the ox shall be stoned. Don't you guys know that? I love it. But if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it hath been testified to his owner, and he hath not kept him in, but that he hath killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and his owner also be put to death. So, if you have an ox that's prone to this sort of thing, you're dead. Sorry. Should have kept him in. If there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. So I guess someone can buy you instead of you being killed. You know, why not? Save resources. Whether he have gored a son or have gored a daughter, according to this judgment shall it be done unto him. That's weird. So if you gore someone's son or daughter, they can gore your son or daughter? So pointless. If the ox shall push a manservant or a maidservant, he shall give unto their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Push? So all they have to do is push you? What does that mean? Must mean something. I don't feel like looking it up right now. Stupid. More stupid. Rest assured, it's something stupid. And if a man shall open a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or an ass fall therein, the owner of the pit shall make it good and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. And if one man's ox hurt another's that he die, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money of it, and the dead ox also they shall divide. Or if it be known that the ox hath used to push in time past, and his owner hath not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead shall be his own. End of chapter 21. Wow, took way too long on that. But yeah, that's that. On to the next chapter. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall be no blood shed for him. Oh, okay, so if you catch a thief and kill him, no blood shed, no big deal. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him. There shall be blood shed for him, for he should make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Moving on, don't care. If the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep or, you know, Macintosh computer, just anything, he shall restore double. So that in that case, that would be 2 Macintosh computers or two oxen, you know, whatever. If a man shall cause a field or vineyard to be eaten and shall put in his beast and shall feed in another man's field, of the best of his own field and of the best of his own vineyard shall he make restitution. You know, it's interesting that 99.99% of this stupid law is cattle related, slash field and cattle related. You know, why wouldn't this eternal timeless God have given like all law we'd ever need? Like, you know, throw in some like copyright law, maritime law, you know, divorce law, like stuff like that. Throw that all in there. Again, one more tiny little thing wouldn't be hard for a God at all. For God, it would be the easiest thing for God to do that. And we would have looked at it and been like, holy crap. They knew about that back then. Huh. And it could have had like our exact laws, or at least close to, or somebody's laws at some other time in the future. Any of them. And that would have been a good prediction. Nope, never did it. Never bothered. If fire break out and catch in thorns so that the stacks of corn or the standing corn or the field be consumed therewith, he that kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. Well, surely. If a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. If the thief be not found, then the master of the house shall be brought unto the judges to see whether he have put his hand into his neighbor's good. For all manners of trespass, whether it be an ox, for ass, for sheep, for raiment, or for any manner of lost thing, which another challengeth to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. I'm just trying to get through this now. It's not worth it. Hopefully you're kind of getting it, but the point is it's just a bunch of stupid specific crap cattle law. If a man deliver unto his neighbor an ass or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep, and it die, or it be hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, then shall an oath of the Lord be between them both, that he hath not put his hand into his neighbor's good, and the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. And if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution unto the owner thereof. If it be torn in pieces, then let him bring it for witness, and he shall not make a good that was torn. If a man borrow aught of his neighbor, and it be hurt or die, the owner thereof being not with it, he shall surely make it good. Make it good, by the way, just means pay him back for it, just so you know, just so you can kind of understand this while I go through it quickly. But if the owner thereof be with it, he shall not make it good. If it be an hired thing, it came for his hire. And if a man entice a maid that is not betrothed and lie with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuse to give her unto him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins. Ooh, whoops. Oh, man. Okay, so what about that time when the sons of Jacob murdered an entire people for this very thing? Oh, man. Turns out that the man should have just been able to pay a dowry and called it even. Ah, whoops. Damn it. Oh, well. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Hundreds of people murdered for no reason. Yeah, you know, God's not going to sweat it. Not going to sweat it. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. That was it. That's that whole verse right there. It's just those couple words, those seven words, eight words. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Simple enough. Can't argue with that. Whosoever lieth with a beast shall surely be put to death. He that sacrifice unto any god, save unto the Lord only, shall be utterly destroyed. Huh, the most emphatic punishment we've heard yet. Thanks, God, again, for putting things in perspective. No one's been harmed in this crime but you, yet this is the worst possible crime? I mean, surely you can handle it, right? I mean, you'll recover, right? If someone sacrifices unto the wrong god, you know, even just, you know, by accident, you'll live, right? Oh, yeah, okay, just make sure. He that sacrifice, oh, I read that. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If thou afflict him in any wise, them in any wise, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. I'm surprised that the sword is a timeless God's weapon of choice. Why not like a bazooka or something, or better yet, like a phaser, you know, from Star Trek, or some other weapon that we've not even invented yet? Like, he's timeless, wouldn't he? I mean, a sword, really? That's your favorite thing, huh? All right, well, it didn't not just so happen to be because that's what people used at the time, mostly. No, okay. You just like swords. All right. Okay, and nothing wrong with them. They're classic. If thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as an usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. If thou at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, thou shalt deliver it unto him by the sun that goeth down. For that is his covering only. Well, I love the tone of this one. For that is his covering only. It is his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass, when he crieth unto me, that I will hear, for I am gracious. That was saying, if you buy someone's clothes because they're like dirt poor, you have to give them back to them when the sun goes down, because where would they sleep? It's like, I just love the tone. It's just so priceless. It's like pleading with us. Thou shalt not revile the gods, nor curse the ruler of thy people. Thou shalt not delay to offer the first of thy ripe fruits and of thy liquors. The firstborn of thy son shalt thou give unto me. Likewise shalt thou do with thine oxen and with thy sheep. 7 days it shall be with his dam. On the eighth day thou shalt give it to me, and ye shall be holy men unto me. Neither ye shall eat any flesh that is torn of beasts in the field, and ye shall cast it to the dogs. And that's the end of that chapter. Thou shalt not raise a false report. Put not thine hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil. Neither shalt thou speak in cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. You know, this is maybe the first good message I've heard in this book yet. Don't follow a multitude to do evil. So it's saying don't just do something wrong because everybody else is doing it. Hey, good moral. One out of, you know, 62,000 or something. You know, well, it's like, just like the old saying goes, even a man-made religion finds a nut every now and then, or a fake god is right twice a day, or one of those. Neither shalt thou countenance a poor man in his cause. If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. If thou shalt see I'm starting to just add words that are normally there. If thou see the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden, and wouldest forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help with him. Thou shalt not rest the judgment of thy poor in his cause. Keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. And thou shalt take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise, and perverteth the words of the righteous. Take no gift. What the hell does that mean? You know, I couldn't find anything on this. There weren't any notes or anything. And, you know, without any guidance, and thou shalt take no gift sort of sounds like we aren't allowed to take gifts. I mean, call me crazy. It occurred to me, I love how you can never just read what the Bible says at all anymore because it's so obvious how dumb it is. You have to have, like, I feel lost without some sort of complicated explanation as to how this verse actually means something else, or it's no longer valid, or there's something wrong, you know, something like that. I don't know how to react, but it sounds like we shouldn't take any gifts. Also, thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. So if they weren't strangers in the land of Egypt, would it be okay to oppress a stranger? In 6 years thou shalt sow thy land, and shalt gather in the fruits thereof. But in the seventh year thou shalt let it rest and lie still, that the poor of thy people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field shall eat. In like manner thou shalt deal with thy vineyard, and with thy olive yard. It's a sort of weird one. So you have to let... It sort of parallels the Sabbath day. Every seventh year, you're supposed to not do any farming if you have a farm. But I think this is sort of a miscalculation, because you're already resting every seventh day. So, you know, you're resting one-seventh of the time. But if you rest every seventh year in addition, then you're actually resting two-sevenths of the time. Well, actually, since a year's worth of Sabbaths will fall in that seventh year, you're resting 26.5% of the time. But that's neither here nor there. The point is that you're not resting the normal seventh of the time, one-seventh of the time. So I don't know that this could be right. What's next? You rest the last 10 years out of 70 and the last 100 years out of 700? And the last 1,000 years out of, just keep going. I don't know what the point of it all is. 6 days thou shalt do thy work, and on the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest, and the son of thy handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed. And in all things that I have said unto you, be circumspect, and make no mention of the name of other gods. Again, just to remind us, neither let it be heard out of thy mouth. 3 times thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. Excuse me. Thou shalt keep the feast of unleavened bread, which we heard so much about. Thou shalt eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded thee, in the time appointed of the month of Abib. For in it thou camest out of Egypt, and none shall appear before me empty. And the feast of the harvest, the first fruits of thy labors, which thou hast sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering, which is the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field. So he's describing 3 sort of celebratory feasts people are to have in his honor. And those feasts must be nice little things to do together, commemorate the, you know, beginning of the harvest and the end of the harvest and all that. But boy, how arbitrary are those things now, though? Like anyone even notices when the harvest season is. It's sort of irrelevant to our everyday lives. But 3 items in the year all thy males shall appear before the Lord God. Thou shalt not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread. He really doesn't like leavened bread. I'm not sure what he hates about it so much. Neither shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until the morning. Clean up all that fat. The first of the first fruits of thy land thou shalt bring into the house of the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not seethe a kid in his mother's milk. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way, and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him, and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions. Oh, pardon my transgressions. For my name is in him. But if thou shalt indeed obey his voice, talking about this angel he's going to send down, I guess, and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto thine enemies, and an adversary unto thine adversaries. Well, hold on. What if two people who obey his voice are adversaries? Then God would become an adversary to himself. Does not compute. I think I just fried God's motherboard. If God were an adversary to himself, I dare say he could defeat himself. And maybe Nietzsche was right all this time. Maybe that's the calculation he made. Anyway, for mine angel shall go before thee, and bring thee into the Amorites, and the Hittites, and the Perizzites, and the Canaanites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I will cut them off. Again, what did these people do? As far as we know, they were just sort of living their lives, you know, in their land, trying to make it like anybody else. But, whoops, oh, sorry, God needs this land for his more important people that matter more, somehow. Yeah, sorry about that. Thou shalt not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do after their works, but thou shalt utterly overthrow them, and quite break down their images. And ye shall serve the Lord your God, and he shall bless thy bread and thy water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of thee, and there shall nothing cast their young, nor be barren in thy land. The number of days I will fulfill. I will send my fear before thee, and will destroy all the people to whom thou shalt come. And I will make all thine enemies turn their backs unto thee, and I will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before thee. I will not drive them out from before thee in 1 year, lest the land become desolate. Of course, I'm not going to do that. And the beasts of the field multiply against thee. By little and little I will drive them out from before thee, until thou be increased and inherit the land. So he has like sort of a phase-in, phase-out method of stealing land. So that everything doesn't go to ruin, you know. You sort of kick people out a little at a time, so that you can maintain what they're doing. And I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea, even unto the Sea of the Philistines, and from the desert under the river, for I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out before thee. God, you're just going to shovel them all out. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. End of chapter. Man, what, really, what did these people do? These poor people, they're the Canaanites and the Hivites and the Hittites and all those people. What did they do? God is, I love this part too. There's a part where God's going to send an angel ahead to tell them that he's going to destroy them. Like, they must have been a little confused. Like, oh, hey, how's it going? Yeah, everybody, guess what? You're all going to die. We're taking your land. It's finally time for us to take back our land. And they're like, what? Your land? I've been here all my life. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't take anybody's land. No, you'll be killed. Must suck for those people, or must have sucked for those people. All right. So that's the end of that chapter, and that's the end of the law bits, pretty much. So I'm going to take this quick opportunity to make an overarching point about that. Now, as I've said before, people always try to reconcile how stupid all this is by saying, well, the old law is no longer in effect. Once you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, then it's fine. But and I've also made the simple point that this doesn't change how God is characterized in here, even if perhaps his law is not in effect. He's still a freaking idiot in this book. Doesn't change that. But I'll assume you remember all that. Another simple point is this. Why should this law ever have been in effect? Sure, it's maybe not in effect now. That's one way to solve it. But why did it even exist at all? It's completely stupid. So you can keep a slave for 6 years if they're a Hebrew, but you have to give them up in the seventh year? Oh, and that law is not in effect anymore if I accept Jesus Christ. Does that mean I can finally keep my Hebrew slaves forever? Not have to give them away? Yes, awesome. It's like if someone, this is sort of, I can't think of a perfect analogy, but it's sort of like if someone said something totally horrible to you. It was like, just think of the most horrible thing. I'll spare you from actually saying it, but just think of the most horrible thing someone could say to you. And then they say, oh, you know what? If you are my friend, I take that back. If you say you like me, I take it back. You know, are you just like, oh, okay, sure. No, you're like, well, why were you even saying that to begin with, you idiot? Like, what exactly did that mean in the first place? Where'd you come up with all that? Would be my question. But no, just don't challenge it. Just move on. That's how religious people do it. Just don't. Once you have a sort of tenable solution, just that's fine. Don't question it any longer. Or just say, well, look, we can't really understand the mind of God and blah, 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 blah. Okay, on to these next chapters. Okay, so the next couple chapters are really boring crap. Really not very much to it, too. I'm just going to try to get through them at this point. I'm so, sort of over it. Yeah. And the Lord, and he said unto Moses, come up unto the Lord, thou and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel, just to name a few, and worship ye afar off. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come nigh, neither shall the people go up with him. And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice. And said, all the words which the Lord hath said we will do, they said in one voice at the same time. It must have sounded weird. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and rose up early in the morning, and builded an altar under the hill, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Holy crap, so he hadn't written any of this down yet? All the crap we just heard he hadn't written down yet until God had told him, and then he told the people? Wow. I wonder how many times he must have been like, shoot. Hey, God? What is it? Are you done writing down everything I told you yet? Yeah. I'm just wondering, just can you give me just the little part about if an ox falls into a pit or something, somebody has to do something. I have everything else. I can't remember that one bit. Very well. The person who dug up the pit and that the ox fell into has to pay for the ox. Ah, okay, got it. Yeah, no, I remember. Got it, thank you. Oh, hey, God. Yes? What was everything after that part? And... and he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord hath said we will do and be obedient. Yeah, we're so good. We're going to do all that weird crap he said with the ox and... And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people. Ugh. And he said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. Then went up Moses and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone. And as it were, the body of heaven in his clearness. And upon the nobles of the children of Israel he laid not his hand. Also they saw God and did not eat and drink. And the Lord said unto Moses, come up to me into the mount, and be there, and I will give thee tables of stone, and a law, and the commandments which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. And Moses rose up, and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up to the mount of God, and he said unto the elders, tarry ye for us here, until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. And if any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them. And Moses went up into the mount, and a cloud covered the mount. And the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day, as it always is, the seventh something, He called unto Moses out of the mist of the cloud, and the sight of the glory of the Lord was like devouring fire on the top of the mount in the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud and gat him up onto the mount, into the mount. And Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. End of that chapter. Moving on. All right, this chapter pretty much specifies in really obnoxious detail exactly how Moses is to construct the Ark, the famous Ark of the Covenant. Then, later on, it describes exactly how Indiana Jones is to find it. So that's pretty cool. Alrighty. And, man, this is terrible. I'm going to blow through this. You're not missing anything. In fact, you can go ahead and turn this off right now, unless you got really nothing else to do. I'm just going to blow through this. So if you really want to hear all the words of the Bible, here goes. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering. Of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering. And this is the offering which ye shall take of them, gold and silver and brass and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair and ram skin dyed red and badger's skins and shittim wood. That's my favorite. S-H-I-T-T-I-M, shittim wood. Oil for the light, spices for anointing oil, and for sweet incense, onyx stones, and stones to be set in the ephod, and in the breastplate. And let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I shew thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it. And they shall make an ark of shittim wood. Still funny. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit and a half the breadth thereof, and 1 cubit and a half the height thereof. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold. Within and without shalt thou overlay it, and shalt make upon it a crown of gold around it. And thou shalt cast 4 rings of gold for it, and put them in the 4 corners thereof. And 2 rings shall be in the one side of it, and 2 rings on the other side of it. And thou shalt make staves of shittim wood, still funny, and overlay them with gold. And thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them. The staves shall be in the rings of the ark, they shall not be taken from it. And thou shalt put into the ark the testimony which I shall give thee. And thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit and a half shall be the breadth thereof. And thou shalt make 2 cherubims of gold, and of beaten work shalt thou make them, in the 2 ends of the mercy seat. And make 1 cherub wood on the other end, and 1 cherub on the other end, and the other cherub on the other end. Even of the mercy seat shall ye make the cherubims on the 2 ends thereof. And the cherubims shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and their faces shall look to one another. Toward the mercy seat shall all the faces of the cherubims be. And thou shalt put the mercy seat above the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee. And there I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubims which are on the ark of the testimony, of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. Thou shalt also make a table of shittim wood. That's suddenly not funny anymore. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit the breadth thereof, and 1 cubit and a half the height thereof. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, and make thereto a crown of gold round about, and thou shalt make unto it a border and hand breadth round about, and thou shalt make a golden crown to the border thereof round about. And thou shalt make for it 4 rings of gold, and put the rings in the 4 corners that are on the 4 feet thereof. God, Moses is just like, oh, God, frighten us down. Can't we just make an art, like some sort of something for you? Isn't it enough that we just make, like, I don't know, anything. All the specific gods, like, no, it must be so, otherwise I will not be able to hear you. It's very fine-tuned sound equipment that I need in order to communicate with you. Must be so. Over against the borders shall the rings be four places of staves to bear the table. And thou shalt make the staves of shittim wood and overlay them with gold, that the table may be borne with them. Almost done. And thou shalt make the dishes thereof, and the spoons thereof, and covers thereof, and bowls thereof, to cover withal, of pure gold shalt thou make them. And thou shalt set upon the table shewbread before me alway. And thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold. Of beaten work shall the candlestick be made. His shaft and his branches, his bowls, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same. And 6 branches shall come out of the sides of it. 3 branches of the candlestick out of one side, and 3 branches of the candlestick out of the other side. 3 bowls make like unto diamonds, with a knop and a flower in one branch. And 3 bowls made like diamonds in the flowers of the other branch. And with a knop and a flower, so in the 6 branches that come out of the candlestick. Are you getting all this, guys? Are you getting this? And in the candlestick shall be 4 bowls made like unto almonds, with their knops and their flowers. And there shall be a knop under 2 branches of the same, and a knop under 2 branches of the same, and a knop under 2 branches of the same. Okay, it really just said the same line 3 times. According to the 6 branches that proceed out of the candlestick, their knops and their branches shall be of the same. All shall be one beaten work of pure gold, and thou shalt make the 7 lamps thereof, and thou shalt light, and they shall light the lamps thereof, and they may give light o'er against it. And the tongs thereof and the snuff dishes thereof shall be of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold shall he make it with all these vessels. And look that thou make them after their pattern which was shewn thee in the mount. All right, done. Why in the world does God care exactly precisely how you make this ark? This God described obviously is an all-powerful. An all-powerful being would not need anything from anyone, least of all some really oddly specifically manufactured ark. So this is BS, of course, and as always, thank you so much for joining me, and send comments to comments on Thomas and the Bible, or visit the crappy website, and